Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, you're listening to Rodney, and this is the Gist of Freedom show. Well, tonight we'll be having a guest, Mr. Timothy Jones, and he'll be discussing, he's a black coin collector, and he's going to be talking about his collection. Are you on the line, Mr. Jones?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Very good. And how are you to this evening?
Fine, fine.
Hi, are you getting any feedback?
No, well, I can hear you fine. I can hear you fine.
Okay. That's very good. Well, thank you for coming on the Gift of Freedom show tonight. And if you can just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. My name is Timothy Jones, and I live in New York, and I am a coin collector, coins, medals, tokens, and they're basically with the theme of African American and people of color. And I collect mostly modern, which I would say from 1960 to the present, and also older coins like the slave tokens back in 1795, the British slave tokens, up to the present. And I'm a member of two coin clubs and also the American Numismatic Association. And one of my collections that I find that your listeners would may be interested about learning something about is the American Negro Commemorative Society. And
okay,
they issued a series one and series two back in 1968 to 1972, commemorating people of color, African Americans, that they felt had contributed to the struggle of African Americans and to upward mobility. And if you have any questions, I can provide you with certain aspects of it or whatever you'd like me to do.
Okay, we do have any collections with Granville T. Woods.
Right. Well, they were also in this series. It's a very interesting series. It was issued in 1968 by a group of African-American men out of Philadelphia. The president is out of Philadelphia. And they decided, because prior to, after the death of Martin Luther King, they were interested in trying to commemorate other individuals, African Americans, who had contributed to the growth of the United States. And the series consisted, series one, and it was minted by the Franklin Mint. They were well known to issue coins throughout the world and the United States and medals and tokens. And they contracted with the Franklin Mint. And series one, they issued 60 medals. They look like coins. They look like a silver dollar, but they're actually medals because they have no government backing. And out of the 60, I don't know if you would want me to indicate the individuals that are on there. I can give you a few of them that were part of the group. The number one issue was Dr. Martin Luther King. Number two was Daniel Hal Williams. Number three was Jean-Baptiste Point du Sauval. There was Benjamin Banneker, Matthew Alexander was number five. Frederick Douglass was number six. Then you go down to number 34 was Peter Salem. There's Sojourner Truth, Blanche K. Bruce, Langston Hughes, William Steele, Whitney Young, Louis Armstrong, Benjamin O. Davis Sr.,
Okay. I'm sorry. Could you just go back up just a little bit? We want to basically, we know a lot was going on in 1968, but we want to just get a kind of let the audience get a feel of what was going on in the era and why it was important that this collection and all, basically how it pertains to the of that era and why it was important for you to know. To bring, I don't know if this the era inspired you to collect the coins, Law, but we want to basically get you to just talk about the era in the 60s and on, 64, 68.
Okay, well, during that time period, pre-Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and post-Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., prior to the event of Dr. King as a national leader, white America seemed kind of oblivious to contributions of black Americans in society. Since white Americans chose the subjects to be honored, designed, and distributed the medals, Booker T. Washington and Frederick Douglass were the principal black subjects of medals prior to the death of Dr. Martin Luther King. And what these black businessmen and people of influence decided, there were quite a few other African Americans who had contributed. So they got together as a group and decided they wanted to honor other blacks during this time period and prior who had contributed to the growth of the United States of America. And what they came up with was this called the American Negro Commemorative Society, and it was they contracted with the Franklin Mint. The primary founder of the group was George A. Beach, and he wanted to get it like a positive means of recognizing the contributions of others, especially people of color.
Black Power influence? Did the Black Power group influence have anything to do with the collection and any radical members or anything like that have to do with the coming up with the collection and all? Did they have any influence in it or the national?
Well, I think it was during the whole, and that was during my time too, during the civil rights movement, and I felt that all the with the incidents in Watts and the Freedom Riders and all that. It was a combination of all this that sort of inspired, this group to want to indicate to America that there are some outstanding blacks other than Mr. Washington and that contributed. And they got together a group, and the group had to put in names that they felt that would be appropriate. And then they voted, and you had to become actually a member of this American Negro Commemorative Society. I think they had like 1,300 members, and those members could actually subscribe to the medals that would be issued. You didn't have to, but if you could only get them through the membership of this group. And they issued two every month.
That's right. Now, you mentioned some things about the Freedom Riders and the Watch. And we have a lot of young listeners. Could you explain exactly what the Freedom Riders was and how they were important in this era in terms of that movement and also, you know, the Watch, so that you get our younger audience up to,
the Freedom Riders, that was between 1960 and 64, and it was dealing with the Jim Crow laws, because they had desegregation, and they were individuals up north. They were males, females, black and white, and they were taking a bus down to, if I'm not mistaken, I think Alabama, and they wanted to ensure that these laws, like, you know, you can sit anywhere on the bus and whatever, and these Jim Crow laws were no longer in existence, or that the desegregation laws and the integration would be enforced. And what they found out, they took the bus. I think I started from New York, then Washington, and then down to Tennessee, then down Mississippi, and I think down to Alabama. But during that time, they were accosted, they were beat up. A lot of the laws were still being perpetuated. The Jim Crow laws were being perpetuated during that time period. And also with the Watts incident, that I'm very familiar with it because it was during my time, but I was in Texas during the time, and a lot of the students in Texas at the colleges were protesting against the Jim Crow laws also, and they would have group protests on campuses, and SNCC also came down there with Stokely Carmichael, and numerous riots, you know, occurred on a lot of the black colleges, and most of us hear about the incident at Kent State, but there were also riots and shootings on the southern black colleges also.
Now, what exactly is SNCC?
That Student Nonviolent, I can't remember the other C, but committee.
That
was like a protest against, segregation. And it actually, it was, I think, in D.C. and Howard and New York, and then it came down to the southern schools. And they came on to black campuses and to get the students to inform them of what was going on and the different laws that weren't being enforced or being discriminated against blacks. And they took their knowledge and their wherewithal out to other parts of the community to inform them. And then it kind of like sort of snowballed. And this is when you got a lot. And this sort of ended up moved out to Watts also and all across the country.
It's a great movement. I know that you're involved with coins and all that. Now, do you have any coins commemorating that era, as far as like coins dealing with like Emmett Till, the Freedom Riders, Watts, and all the different things? Are there any coins that have got generated during that era or after that era?
Now, that's a very good question. This is why, and this kind of, you're kind of coming back to the question you had originally asked of why the American Negro Commemorative Society. Okay, most of the the coins or the medals that would be minted, it was minted basically to commemorate an incident, but also for those who would mint them, it had to be a financial kind, not like a windfall, but it had to be financial beneficial for them to issue it. And during that time, most of the individuals who were involved in minting these were all, you know, non-black. And most of the whites, you would have to go to predominantly the white distributors in that in order to have something minted. And in order to do that, they had to feel that it was financially, you know, feasible for them, profitable for them to do it. And how it comes back to the American Negro Commemorative Society, they were in Philadelphia, and the Franklin Mint, who was very well known to mint medals and tokens throughout the United States and throughout the world at the time, were willing to take on this issue of the American Negro Commemorative Society. Most of the other, like the Freedom Riders and that, they didn't feel at the time, or I can't say they didn't, but it wasn't thought of that it would get enough people who would be interested to purchase them, so they did not feel it would be profitable to mint these pieces where these companies would want to invest in this and also make a profit. And these individuals under the American Negro Commemorative Society were kind of influential business individuals, and the individuals that they wanted to honor, they felt, dealing with the Franklin Mint, that this would be profitable for both sides. And this is how the American Negro Commemorative Society came into issuing these medals. Although very few, as you say, there were only 1,300 members, and there were only like 1,300 pieces maximum that could be minted, and most, and I can't say most, but in the first series, most of the members, there were like 1,200 to 1,300 that actually bought the medals, and in the second series, there were only like 971 members who bought them. So these are very rare, and they're hard to find, you know. Now, if you ever, you know, if you're aware of it and come across it, because that's considered a very, very low number of pieces. Because as far as profitable making at the time, I think they were issued like $7 during that time to have one, and it never really took off. And so when silver later on went up to back in like the early 70s, $3 to $4, they only issued 20 pieces in series 2, in which they wanted to actually issue 60. But there wasn't that much of the demand. But now these coins or these medals are, I find, you know, if you want to know African American history and if you want something as a historical and something that would be profitable over the years, if you're able to come across them, they would be very beneficial educationally and profitable if you could find them.
Yes, I know my wife, she tried to purchase some from you, and you know, she knows, we know that they're rare.
This is Mr. Gibbs, huh?
Yes.
Now, oh, how are you? I remember meeting you.
Yes, we met at the in Maryland.
Right.
So, yeah,
right.
You know, she was interested very much into.
Oh, I know the one that, you know, and I was reading more because I was going through a lot of, because sometimes I, you know, when I go to the shows, I purchase things or if I find things, and then later on I'm going somewhere else, and then I come back to, and it was very interesting. I know that she is related; her ancestry goes back to Mr. Still.
Yes,
and
she is interested.
Yeah, one of the coins in series number one, that the issue number 38, is William Steele. And on the reverse of that is Henry Box Brown. And showing him when he was an escaped slave. And it shows Mr. Steele seeing Mr. Lifting up, opening the box, and Henry Brown coming out of the box. But that's very, it's very, I think it's very unique, historical, very educational.
Now, who exactly, I know you mentioned there's 1,200 members, who nominated Mr. Steele?
Oh, okay, they had different members, okay, and they had a board of directors, and he and these individuals, okay, they made suggestions, and based on, I think there were like 12, let me see if I can make, they were like all field, I think they were 12 or more on these board of directors, and they submitted these names, and based on, I don't know how many numbers that they decided, well, we have this many for this, this many for this, this many for that, but they came up with these individuals, and I guess it was, I guess, the total, the highest numbers of, say, if they did 20 names, the highest number for this time, you know, for the first series was, you know, if they had a certain number, they would pick the highest of the first five, and then so on and down the line. Now, they did two each month once they decided who would be going, you know, being allowed to. And then the members, they would also send things out to the members and have them send in their recommendations also, or who they would be interested in having on the medal. And then they would total up when a series was due, and based on the, I'm thinking, but I'm not sure because I wasn't a member then. I've never spoken to actually a member. I've read about some of them, but never spoken to them regarding this particular, how they actually came with who was to be honored on each of these medals. But they came up with a figure, and they also sent out booklets, you know, which they have on the Series 1. They have Volume 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, which has all the names of the individuals and, a history of them and what they had done to indicate why they would be commemorated on the medals.
Now, I'd like to come back to that in a moment, but you have a piece that, Am I Not a Man piece. I'd like to talk about that and let the audience get
Yeah, Am I Not a Man and a Brother. That's a piece that was issued with, that was the, back in 1795. Now, there's the British version and there's also the U.S. version. The British version came out in 1795. And it was Isaiah Wedgwood, like, you know, the Wedgwood pieces that we have in the stores. It's from this gentleman. He was an abolitionist, and he wanted to abolish slavery, the slave trade, from Great Britain and throughout the world. So he was a member of the abolitionists, and this was their insignia when. This group of men, there was Wilberforce involved, and there was a couple of, I can't think of their names offhand now, freed slaves in Britain who had come together, and there was Mr. Clark, and they had this abolitionist, and they were against slavery throughout the world, and they issued this token, Am I Not a Man or a Brother, in 1795. It's a copper piece, and it was just sort of like, it was to like to pass around to different groups and to circulate throughout the community to indicate there are people who are against slavery and they would be willing to, not so much willing to, but get on board and try to eliminate slavery throughout the world. And this is how, and these tokens were sort of issued as a, how would you say it, a promotion in that sense for the abolitionist. And what happened in 1838, there was a U.S. coin, well, it was like a token, It was also very similar, but it was had a female on it, and it was in 1838, and it was Am I Not a Woman and a Sister? And that was issued with in the U.S. and was from a company in New Jersey, and that was for the abolitionists in the United States. And you had Benjamin Franklin, and you had a lot of aristocrats from Massachusetts. They were abolitionists who funded this group who was interested in abolishing slavery in the United States. And the Am I Not a Man or a Brother piece with the male with the same design as the British, but on the back of it was similar to with the wreath with the U.S. There were only three pieces of the U.S. male version that exist in the United States, but they have the female, which is kind of, you know, if you look around, you can find it, but the prices, you know, people are becoming more aware of it. The prices have actually gone up on a lot of these pieces, because at one time you could get them for like $20 or $30. Now, even in not even good condition in that, they start at $100 and they go up to over $1,000 now.
Yes. Now, how did you get to come across these pieces?
Well, I was always interested in that area, you know, anything relating to the black experience. And I joined the coin clubs, and I would go to the coin shows. I was sort of like self-taught because I wanted somebody to, like, really teach me and give me all the answers. But I found out that you can't do that. In a sense, and really be knowledgeable, you know, you have to read and you have to join clubs and go to these areas where they do issue different pieces. And just through me going through to the shows and going to these coin clubs, they would have other individuals who would give presentations, and this is how I found out. And then I started searching for them.
Now, you did, I'm sure you had a lot of people to encounter, but when you get these pieces, how do you know as far as your history, and how do you know what you're looking at? And it's been specific. You know, you seem to have a very good command on history and all. So, and I just want to know, basically, when you come across these pieces, how do you know, basically, how to value them?
How do you know if they're original
or
they're counterfeit or whatever? That's a very good question, but that's years and years of just reading a lot, reading certain periodicals that come out all the time. They always say read the book before you buy the coin. So you try to get as much knowledge as possible. It's just like buying commodities and that. You try to get as much knowledge as possible. And then through seeing those different pieces throughout the time, you know, over the years, you know, you go to different shows and people have them there. And by looking at them and examining them and seeing the original one when you go to these auction companies, they have the originals. And just by looking at them and seeing them over the time, you develop a feel of you know, what's authentic and what isn't authentic. And you have to this day, like you have dealers who've been in the field for years, and they have certain counterfeits that you don't know. But there's certain ways you can protect yourself when you buy something that you buy it from a reputable dealer. You also say if you make a determination through, they have grading companies, that if you take it to a grading company and they find out that it's not authentic, that, you know, your money will be returned. Or you work that out. And usually if these are reputable dealers and they've been in the field for a long time, they will honor it because they go to other shows too. And they don't want, you know, the word of mouth to be negative saying anything that, you know, they issued, you know, counterfeit pieces and they didn't honor, you know, they didn't honor what they had said they were going to do. So it's just, you know, and you just use basically, in a sense, experience, knowledge like in any other field. And common sense in a lot of these areas.
All right. Now, we'll get back to that. I see that you have a very good wealth of history there. And, you know, you mentioned some very good things like Wilberforce and what was England, what's going on in the movement in England as far as abolishing.
Right, right.
And they
put out a movie about two or three years ago on Wilberforce.
Yes.
And they actually showed, I think they showed the insignia of the token in the movie.
Yeah, that was the Amazing Grace movie. Amazing Grace.
Right.
Now, did you learn this, most of this information? Is from like a history class, or is it from like a grandma's porch? Is it like a word of mouth? Did you learn this from like
a
Creole type?
It's a word of mouth, and it was like I don't know why, but I just wanted to collect. I guess because I'm part of the during the civil rights movement time period. In segregation,
yes.
And I was also an army brat. In other words, I was in my formative years. I was young. My father was in the service, so we got to travel a lot throughout the world. So I had like a lot of exposure to different countries, different cultures, and whatever. But I was always considered to myself American, black, and during the civil rights movement. I went to schools down south where, although my father was in the service, we couldn't go on the military post. We had to be bused 30 miles to school while we were in Maryland because it was prior to integration. So all that just stayed with me over the years and who I was and why, certain things, experiences that I had. And it just stayed with me, and I always wanted to know. I always thought we had a very rich culture, and it was just like, it was sort of hidden, and people just weren't aware of the things that, that we had accomplished and that we had, been honored on. And through tokens and that, this was sort of a way to recognize this rich history and culture.
Now, do you have any black military coins? Colin Powell's, anybody of that nature?
I have. They have medals from U.S. Mint issued the Colin Powell medal. Being my father was in the service, so I was drawn to the military. So they did a 3-inch size large medal. And they did a, because he was issued the pavilion, he was issued a gold medal by Congress. And once you are issued a gold medal by Congress, the Mint will issue, for the public, they'll issue bronze medals in 3-inch and bronze medals in 1.5-inch. And they're available at the U.S. Mint. Now, I don't know if Colin Powell is still available, but they also did... they did a Joe Louis medal. They did a Roy Wilkins medal. They
yes.
did Marian Anderson. I think those were, they may have done a few others, but any of the ones that they issued from the Mint, I was able to obtain them and I was interested in them.
I'm sorry. That's very good. Now, if you're doing, any shows in New Jersey, and if you do, if you could tell us how we can meet with you in person, that would be good.
I have done shows, but I have not done as many. I may be doing a few later. I know I'm going to be going to a few, but I've. Mostly sort of slow. Well, I never really did a lot of shows. I was like a vest pocket dealer. I wouldn't do a table,
mm-hmm.
but I would walk around with stuff like how you had seen me in Maryland. And I would look at other, other dealers, and then I would see what they carried. And then I would, if I had something unique, because most of the dealers, they're interested in some of the stuff that I have, they weren't aware of, or I exposed them to them, and that's how I dealt with it. I'm not sure.
My wife told me that you were supposed to be doing a show in Parsippany, New Jersey.
Oh, I go to Parsippany. That's what I was telling her. Right. I don't actually do a show, but in Parsippany on the first Sunday of every month, they have a show at the Police Athletic League on Route 46 in Parsippany. I attend there, and I look for things. But if I know an individual is going there, or somebody that I know is for me, they're going to be going there, and they're interested in something, I will sort of make a personal endeavor to get the things that I know that they're familiar with and bring them there to the show and deal with them on that level, not necessarily behind the table and that, but you can trade and sell and deal, whatever, but if I know they're coming there and they're interested in certain things, I make an attempt to bring them to the show.
Okay, Mr. Jones, the show is coming to a close. What I want to do is, before it ends, I want to let you recap so that our audience can get some of your contact information and all, basically. So if you give us your contact information and things, ways that people can contact you, websites,
okay,
or anything.
One of your things that your wife told me, which kind of, and a lot of people have gotten upset with me because that, I'm retired now, but I was on the internet, this and this. I may get back on it because this, I know in the younger generation, this is how they do it, you know, through the internet, email and that. I don't have that, but the contact that they need is area code, telephone number is area code 914-686-5324.
Okay.
The business number, and then also my cell number is area code 914-330-5832.
Okay.
And then also, if they want to, I know that, you know, they're on the internet and everything is quick and fast and texting and that, they can send something in the mail to me if they're really interested and they haven't been able to get me to these numbers, and if they send me something in the mail, then I know they're very serious. It's called Classic Heritage.
Okay, Classic Heritage.
Classic Heritage, Post Office Box 1.
Okay.
So that's, a lot of people just know me by, you know, oh, you're number one. Post Office Box 1, White Plains, New York,
10605. Mm-hmm. Now you have a lot of important information, I'm quite sure. Have you ever considered printing a textbook, getting a textbook? Or writing a book or so? I know a lot of this information is not in the textbook, so, did you ever consider writing a book?
Oh, writing. You know, a lot of this information is available, okay, but they're in so many different, you know, as myself, per se, is doing it, because, see, I was taught through different other individuals who sort of told me, who were writing books, not so much on that topic, but they were different topics, like on the American Negro Commemorative Society. I think they're in the Newark Museum. There was an article done years ago, and I wanted to go there to the Newark to see if it still existed, but I don't know. But there's a whole thing on, it was an excellent description of the American Negro Commemorative Society at the Newark Museum in Newark, New Jersey. And it was done in 1971. It was done by Dorothy Bud Bartle, B-A-R-T-L-E. And you may, if you go on the internet through the Newark Museum and do American Negro Commemorative Society, it may come up. You may get all that information there. But anybody who contacts me and one can tell, you know, if an individual is serious enough, you know, you've been in the field long enough, I will follow up with them and try to give them as much information or assist them as much as I can.
All right, thank you for
obtaining the information.
Now, let me ask you, the 1796 abolitionist token, that am I not a man or brother? Now, is that connected to Martin Luther King's march in any way?
Am I not a man or a brother? See, that was in 1795.
1795.
And that goes, and then from there, I think people, you know, if you see things similar, it goes back to that the abolition of the slave trade throughout the world.
Now, what about the placard? I am not a man. Placard.
Oh, the placard. That's
yes.
That's all goes back to 1795.
Okay.
Back to Wedgwood. Okay, and then they have different groups on the offshoot. But the placard, when you have that design and you see that, there's the smaller versions of it. They've had ashtrays. No, I can't say ashtrays. They're called, like, they weren't ashtrays, but they were different Wedgwood pieces with the design with them. But it all goes back to the abolitionists back in Great Britain.
Okay, now, I'm trying to get back to Martin Luther King, his last march, and them carrying around the placards and with the garbage men and things like that. Of that, am
okay,
I not a man? Does that contribute to the attitude of am I not a man or brother, that type of, that mindset that they were in when they did the march? Was that somehow connected to the 1796?
I'm not sure, but it seems like, you know, because I know Martin and a lot of the followers, they were well-read and they knew history very well. And I think that had something, I think it was related to all that. You know, am I not a woman or a sister and whatever. I think that all came together, as, you know, through the movement, you know, and they developed their own way of presenting, you know, how they would go about, you know, trying to obtain, the, you know, their civil rights. And there are certain Franklin Mint issues, but they were set. Like they actually had with Martin Luther King with the march, they have, like, silver art bars with him actually going in the march and that. But, like, they had, like, a set where they had, like, 200 pieces of history of the United States from 1776 to 1976, the 200th anniversary, and bicentennial, and you would have to buy the set in order just to get, like, they only had, like, maybe two or three or four pieces relating to, you know, African Americans, and the set was, like, you know, with silver was very costly. But what has happened over the years, some people just wanted certain pieces. The pieces were broken out, and you just have to kind of know what you're kind of looking for. And I was able to obtain certain pieces just because I was in that scene. Anything with African Americans relating to the black experience. And through my years, the dealers would know what I'm looking for, and if they would come across something, they would say, oh, I have something here, maybe you would be interested. So I was able to locate these pieces, but they're extremely rare. Because most of them were in sets, and then when silver went up to, in 1980, went up to like $50 an ounce, a lot of the people, you know, melted them, and they don't even exist anymore.
Well, thank you, Mr. Jones. Well, before we come to the end on the show, quickly go over the collection from 68 once again, and before we go, give us a kind of like a price range that we can use.
Okay, well, the price
collection
range is, you can... It's so unique, okay? You may, if you see a piece, somebody may not even know what it is, and you can get it for the melt value because it's like silver. It's a little less than an ounce of silver. I would say right now, based on what silver is, I would say the lowest you would probably go would be $40 now, okay? And you may even get it less if somebody doesn't really know what it is. But if they know, it's like it has like a 0.925 silver, you would say $40. And I've seen some of them go up to $150 to $200. It varies.
Okay. Now give
varies.
Us your top
so
choice.
Broad.
Excuse now,
me?
What would be your, I'm sorry, well, give us an idea what your top choice or your rarest or your most interesting piece that you would consider.
Okay,
to be,
in that series, the most unique and rare because it was number one and it was Dr. Martin Luther King. Now, it was issued at $7 back in 1968. Now, I had a publication or one of the older issues. It stated from the American Negro Commemorative Society, it's lucky if you can find, this was done in 1974, it's lucky if you can find this coin for $125. Now, somebody who doesn't know what it is, because, you know, dealers buy estates and they have the pieces out there and they say, oh, it's a Martin Luther King, but they don't even know it's from the American Negro Commemorative Society. They may,
yes,
they may tell you $40 or less because they don't really know. And the key is knowledge. Okay, if you know what it is, and mostly, you know, a lot of the, when I made purchases back then, a lot of them didn't even know it was American Negro Commemorative Society. They just knew it was this person, you know, oh, it was a Martin Luther King piece. And they just like, because they did a lot of Martin Luther King pieces back in the, after his death in the 60s and the 70s. But they weren't, they didn't realize, you know, it was from the American Negro Commemorative Society. And to be honest, I've only seen like three of those pieces in the years that I've been collecting.
All right. Now, what would you consider the next piece other than the Martin Luther King? What would be like next in the collection that would be valued?
I would say Frederick Douglass because he's well, you know, well known. More so, and you'd almost have to say in a sense, which is kind of sad to say, is known to the Caucasian race, because they sort of set the you know, the goal for what's in demand, you know, supply and demand. Everybody knows Martin Luther King. Everybody, a lot of their, you know,
knows Frederick.
They sort of make the price for it.
Now, what about
Frederick Douglass?
And what about William Still? Like you said, I know a lot of.
Okay, now most people have no idea who he is. Okay, and if you find it, it's, you know, the less you know about it, it's almost like when somebody tells you, you know, when you want to buy something, and they tell you, you don't let them know how much you really want to buy it for, because once they know it, you know, the price keeps going up.
Yes.
But it's, you know, it's just it's in anything that you deal with. You know, some people, most people have no idea who he is. Okay, I know who he is, and I know the history because I was interested in slavery, and then Henry Fox Brown, they did a book on him, and it all just came in, you know, it came together, Underground Railroad, you know, with Tugman, and all that came in together, so I understood it, and I... And it's very well made, you know, the piece from the Franklin Mint. It's like very artistic. It's very well done. So it's.
But we thank you very much.
You know, okay.
I'm
I can't
sorry,
put a price on it, but with any information I can be helpful with, I will be.
Well, I think our audience has gained a lot from your knowledge and in your collection and all, and we just want to end the show basically just giving us your info and any last words that you'd like to share with our audience.
Well, whatever, you know, I would say anybody who's interested in collecting or whatever, not necessarily coins, but if you enjoy something, and then that's usually the best way to go. Because it gives you that intrinsic feeling of satisfaction. And it doesn't seem like to be so-called a job, and you get fulfillment from it, whether the price is higher, whether the price is lower in collecting. But do, you know, collect what you enjoy and you have a strong interest in. And most likely in the long run, it becomes beneficial, you know, educationally and sometimes financially.
Well, on that note, thank you very much. And just before I close out one more time, could you just give us your contact information?
Okay. The phone number again is area code 914-686-5324. A cell number is area code 914-330-5832. And the mailing address is Classic Heritage, You can also put my name, you know, Timothy Jones, but Post Office Box 1, White Plains, New York, 10605.
And thank you very much, Mr. Jones, and we look forward to having you back on Kiss of Freedom show again and discuss some further details.
Okay, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Likewise. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.